The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, the original tale of the palm tree story features violence, murder, and child abuse. Please exercise caution for children under 13. It was a hot day in the village, far too hot for young Maribel. The poor woman was pregnant and fending for herself, but with no one else to fetch her water, she slowly made the long journey to the river alone. As she struggled to fill her jug, Maribel spotted three young men walking along the path. She recognized them as troublemakers from her village, but that day they were carrying supplies and machetes as if they were journeying into the jungle. She placed the filled jug of water on her head and walked toward the shore. But as she stepped forward, her knees buckled. She gasped for air as pain surged through her body. The baby was coming. Maribel pleaded to the three men from town,
"Please, get a doctor. I'm about to give birth."
But they simply stood and laughed as she writhed in agony. With a scream, Maribel suddenly felt a weight leave her body and fall into the river below. She dropped her jug and searched the bloody water. But what came out of the river was no baby. Maribel was stunned. He had a head of dark, thick hair, long limbs, and a full set of teeth. Maribel had just given birth to a full-grown boy. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales, a Parcast original. Every Wednesday, we dive into the dark origins of another fairy tale. You can find all episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Tales for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Tales in the search bar. Today we're telling the legend of the palm tree story, a Colombian folktale about a magical newborn boy who embarks on a dangerous journey and helps his unwitting companions along the way. We'll dive into the origins of the tale right after this. The palm tree story was first collected and translated by editor John Bierhost in his 2002 book, Latin American Folktales, Stories from Hispanic and Indian Traditions. In his collection, Bierhost recorded and translated dozens of stories from indigenous tribes and peoples throughout North and South America. Because it's been passed down through generations of oral tradition, the exact origin of the palm tree story is unclear. However, the tale most likely comes from Colombia, specifically during its colonization by the Spanish Empire. The title, however, may be rooted in one of the region's most intriguing natural wonders, the wax palm trees of Cocora Valley. The wax palm is the tallest species of palm tree in the world, capable of growing as high as 200 feet, and its towering height plays an important role in our tale. The palm tree story also concerns witches, magic, and the encroaching influence of Christianity during colonization. But mysticism aside, it's an adventure tale that teaches its listeners that almost anyone, despite their misdeeds, can be steered toward a righteous path. The three men stood astonished at the sight before them on the riverbank. They had just witnessed Maribel give birth, but the baby that emerged from the river wasn't a baby at all. It was a full-grown child. The boy grabbed the jug Maribel had just dropped into the river and handed it to her. He then said brightly,
Mama, I'm so happy to finally meet you. Now may I have your blessing to follow those men?
He then pointed at the three troublemakers from the village. Their jaws dropped. Still shocked, Maribel could only stammer.
Yes, you may go.
The boy gave a delighted giggle and kissed his mother on the cheek.
Thank you, Mama. I shall return soon with fortunes and goods for you.
Then the nude little boy scampered off in the direction of the three shocked men. The trio looked at one another, horrified, before disappearing into the jungle. The quicker they could lose the strange child, the better. The men used their machetes to cut through walls of foliage, but as they made their way deeper into the jungle, the naked little boy suddenly appeared. He chirped as brightly as the birds.
Hello, men. I'd like to be your friend. May I accompany you on your mysterious journey?
One man, the tallest of the group, growled.
Get the hell out of here, kid. We're not babysitters.
But the boy simply beamed up at him and asked him his name. Holding his machete high, he boomed.
I'm Santiago, and I'm leading this journey.
The man to Santiago's right, a stout but brawny fellow, then replied,
And I am Samuel, the strongest of us.
He flexed the muscles on his tattooed arms.
And I am Sebastian. My speed is unmatched.
A short, skinny man responded to the left of Santiago. The boy giggled.
What lovely names! I wish I had a name, but I left before Mama could give me one. I'm sure she'll have a good name for me once I return with fortunes.
The trio looked at one another. The situation was becoming more bizarre by the minute. The boy then asked why they were exploring the jungle. Santiago impatiently explained that their village had fallen on hard times. A blight had killed their crops and trade had stopped, but they hoped that in the land beyond the jungle, they'd find resources to save their home and wealth for themselves.
Wouldn't it be nicer to share your fortunes?
The boy asked. The men rolled their eyes. They were getting sick of this miraculous newborn already.
Go back to your mother, you little freak!
Santiago growled, pushing past the boy. The child looked dejected as they walked away. But as they moved deeper into the jungle, they heard the patter of small feet following behind them. Turning around, they were met once again with the smiling face of the boy. Santiago sighed.
He's quite mobile for a baby,
Samuel commented, scratching his chin. Santiago's face grew red. This damned child was going to keep following them. But then, something caught his attention. An anthill. Suddenly, he had an idea. Santiago grabbed the boy and pushed him against the hill, while Samuel and Sebastian tied him to it with some rope.
Maybe your mama will come and rescue you if you cry enough.
Santiago sneered. But even as fire ants crawled over his body, the boy seemed oddly calm. He smiled.
Okay, see you soon, new friends.
As Santiago and Samuel moved back onto the path, Sebastian stayed. He pitied the child. Sebastian wouldn't want to anger Santiago, but he felt compelled to do something. Sebastian emptied a burlap sack he'd been using to carry his supplies and placed it over the boy. At least that way, the ants couldn't bite him completely. His conscience clear, the thin, fast man sprinted after his companions. But they hadn't even made it a mile down the path before they heard scampering footsteps. There, once again, was the boy, this time wearing the burlap sack. The three men stopped dead in their tracks, dumbfounded. The boy raced toward them, waving the rope he'd been tied with.
"Friends, wait for me! I have your string!"
The boy held out the rope to Santiago.
"Here you are, Santiago. I thought you could still use it for our journey."
Santiago stared at him, wide-eyed. Minutes ago, the boy was covered in fire ants, and yet he didn't have a single bite on his body. Santiago was getting sick and tired of this weird kid following them around, but then he noticed a nearby lagoon. The water was dark and surely deep. He grabbed the boy and tied him to a large rock. Then he told Samuel to throw him into the water. The strong man hesitated. He didn't want to hurt the kid, but he couldn't say no to Santiago. So he plucked a reed from a bush and fashioned a straw out of it. Then he put it in the boy's mouth and dropped him into the lagoon. The boy sank and sank, but still the straw poked out from the water's surface. But Samuel made sure to block Santiago's view. Then the trio advanced onward. The three men managed to make it a few miles further into the jungle, but as the sun began to set, they heard that all too familiar noise, tiny footsteps racing up behind them. The boy was already on their tails despite being anchored to the bottom of the lagoon, and somehow he was miraculously dry.
"Dear friends, please wait,"
the boy pleaded. He sprinted toward them, holding the rope they'd used to tie him.
You keep forgetting your string."
Santiago was livid.
"That's it. We will beat your tiny body so badly, you'll never walk through this jungle again. Break him in two,"
the tall man ordered as he lunged at the boy, but the kid simply scampered off. Reluctantly, Samuel and Sebastian gave chase. Sebastian sprinted after the boy, but despite his speed, he was always just out of Sebastian's reach. The runner doubled over, breathless, as the kid stood giddy on the path ahead.
"That was a wonderful game, Sebastian. Can we play some more?"
Suddenly, Samuel managed to block his path, but the kid zoomed past him, knocking the burly man on his back. This went on for hours as the sun continued to sink behind the horizon. Just when they thought they had the boy cornered, he managed to climb up a mighty wax palm tree, the tallest in the land. The child had somehow scaled hundreds of feet to the very top. The three men were astonished at the sight of the child hanging from the palm fronds. The smartest, the strongest, and the fastest men in the village were beaten by a boy literally born that day. But the sky was growing dark now, and soon enough beasts and bandits would be out in the open. They needed to find shelter, fast. The child smiled down at his friends and waved. He was having so much fun, but his companions looked tired and worried, so he decided to help. The boy looked over the green jungle canopy when he spotted a small cottage a few miles away with black smoke billowing from its chimney. He yelled down to them,
"Friends, look in the distance. I see a little house. Perhaps we could go there to rest."
The boy had been a thorn in their side since their adventure began, but now they were desperate. If it meant shelter for the night, they would follow him anywhere. Little did they know he was leading them into grave danger. Coming up, the boy and the adventurers find refuge with an unexpected host. Now, back to the story. Despite their skills and size, Santiago, Sebastian, and Samuel were tricked time and time again by the cheery newborn boy. But when they found themselves in the wilderness at sunset, they knew they needed to find shelter fast. Miraculously, the boy spotted a cottage from atop a palm tree. Within seconds, the boy had scaled down the mighty palm tree to meet the weary men and began guiding them to the cottage with the smoking chimney. Smoke meant three important things: warmth, people, and, most importantly, cooked food. After trekking a few miles, they found themselves exactly where the boy described, a house sitting on a small plot of land surrounded by sky-high wax palm trees. The farm had a barnyard full of bleating goats, a chicken coop, and a luscious garden of vegetables nearby. Santiago was stunned.
Who knew such a paradise was just beyond the jungle?
The boy led them to the front door of the cottage, but before they could discuss their next move, the boy knocked. The men froze. They hadn't thought this through. What if the home belonged to bandits? They reached for their blades just in case. They could hear someone slowly approach from inside with small, uneven steps, like they were limping. Then the door opened. On the other side was an old woman in a black cloak. Her skin was wrinkled and aged like old leather, and framing her face was a scraggly mane of silver hair. The men sighed in relief. Confused, the boy imitated them and sighed too. The old woman grinned widely at the group.
"How surprising! What wind blew you boys here?"
The boy piped up,
"A strong and forceful one."
Santiago groaned. He explained they were venturing through the jungle and needed shelter. Would it be too much bother if they could stay the night?
"Good thing you lot stumbled upon my farm before the sunset. There are beasts and bandits out there aplenty. Now quickly come inside before it gets dark."
The woman ushered them in, and the men stepped through the door, thanking her profusely. It was incredibly kind for an old woman to accept strange men into her home. They couldn't believe their luck. But the boy didn't share their enthusiasm. As soon as he entered the cottage, his attitude seemed to shift from careless joy to suspicion. For the first time in his day-long life, something weighed on his mind, but he said nothing, keeping his thoughts to himself. The adventurers looked around the cottage, amazed. It was adorned with finely cut wooden furniture and a stone fireplace crackling with flames. Nearby, a large strip of meat sizzled on a skillet, creating a delicious aroma. After their long trek through the jungle, it was heaven. Suddenly, the front door slammed behind them, causing the three men to jump in surprise. But the boy didn't flinch. He simply stared at the old crone. She cackled.
"Oh, don't be frightened. The wind just has a way of entering and exiting my home as it pleases."
She then gestured to a small table. Somehow, it was already set with plates and cutlery for four.
"Please, dears, take a seat. My daughters and I were about to eat, but you men look awfully hungry. We'll serve you first, then eat afterward."
The old woman then snapped her fingers, and footsteps echoed from the hallway. She said,
"Allow me to introduce myself. I am Palmera, but please call me Madre Palmera. These are my daughters."
The men's jaws dropped. Three of the most beautiful women they had ever seen had just walked through the door, each as lovely as the last. Their skin was flawless, and their faces angelic. and each daughter's hair was a different, extraordinary color. One's locks were fiery red, another's blue as water, and the third had braids the color of porcelain. The little boy looked on, less impressed than his more mature companions. Noticing the men's stunned expression, the old woman cleared her throat.
"These are my beloved daughters, Ruby, Zephyra, and Perla. They will make sure your stay with us is a pleasant one."
The three men smiled even wider as their imaginations ran wild. The trio introduced themselves to the three women and complimented them profusely. But the boy simply looked up to Madre Palmera and asked bluntly,
"May we eat now?"
Santiago smacked the boy, apologizing to Madre Palmera for his rudeness, but the old woman just patted the child on the head.
"It's fine. After all, he's a growing boy. How old is he?"
she inquired.
"Today,"
the boy responded.
"I'm as old as today."
The old woman paused.
"Don't mind him. He's a silly boy."
Santiago laughed, not wanting to explain the madness they'd witnessed that morning. The woman simply smiled and, without a word, led them to the table. Madre Palmera served them from her skillet. The seasoned meat made the men's mouths water, almost as much as ogling Madre's beautiful daughters. The old woman continued to put out a feast of asada, empanadas, and tamales, each stuffed with the tastiest meats and spices they'd ever tasted. And all the while, Ruby played a flute to entertain them, while Perla sang and Zephyra poured them drinks. Madre Palmera made sure their glasses were never empty. Santiago stuffed his face while Samuel and Sebastian drank merrily. But all the while, the boy sat, strangely composed. The revelry lasted late into the night until the men were full and drunk. Soon, Madre's three daughters helped each man to his shaky feet and guided them to the bedroom. Inside were three comfortable-looking beds with intricately carved wooden frames.
"Please, each of you take a bed with one of my daughters. I want to make sure you men are warm and comfortable tonight."
The drunken adventurers couldn't believe their luck. Each daughter then took their hands and led them to a corresponding bed. Back in the kitchen, Madre Palmera approached the boy. She explained that unfortunately there were no more beds, but that she could set up a cot for him in the dining room. The child shook his head.
"I don't want to sleep inside. I don't like it in this house."
He then crossed his arms in defiance and stared the woman down. Madre Palmera frowned, taken aback by his sudden rudeness. She grabbed his arm and tugged him outside, leading him to the barn. There, the old woman took him to a pen of nanny goats and sat him down on a pile of hay.
"If you do not like it inside my home, then you can spend the night in the barn with the goats."
The boy didn't look upset by this development in the slightest. He lay amongst the beasts and seemed at peace.
"Thank you, Madre Palmera, for all your kindness and hospitality. I will see you later."
With a knowing smile, he then closed his eyes and drifted off to sleep. Satisfied, Madre Palmera made her way back to the cottage and peeked into the bedroom. Sure enough, each woman was tightly embraced by each drunken, snoring man. A wicked smile curled across her face. It was all going according to her plan. The old woman then moved with unexpected speed, her limp miraculously gone, she rushed to her study and sifted through an array of potions and tools. Then she began sharpening a fiendish-looking blade. It was a knife over 2 feet long with a black wooden handle. The serrated blade was stained red, not with rust, but with the dried blood of countless victims. Blood that she drained into a jug she kept on an altar, the glass near empty. Her guests would fill it back to the brim. As she sharpened the blade, she chanted,
"Ra, ra, ra, little knife, do your work, ra."
With every word, her mystical blade seemed to grow sharper and darker, her mad grin reflected in the dirty metal. When her knife was at its sharpest, Madre Palmera stepped outside and made her way toward the barn.
"The foolish child shall be the first to go. Then I shall flay those fools from the village,"
the witch cackled in the wind. Madre Palmera quietly opened the barn door. Among the goats, the boy was dreaming peacefully. All she needed was one clear strike, and he would be dead before he could utter a word. She stepped closer and closer, grinning at how easy this slaughter would be. Madre Palmera then raised her knife high above the little boy's sleeping form, ready to plunge it into his skull. Coming up, Madre Palmera's scheme comes to wicked fruition. Now, back to the story. The newborn boy and his grown-up companions had found themselves at the cottage of the kindly Madre Palmera and her 3 gorgeous daughters. The women fed and comforted them, lulling them into a deep slumber. But as soon as they fell asleep, Madre got to work enacting her real plan, to slaughter them all. In her barn, Madre Palmera held the blade so high that its shadow stretched over the boy's sleeping body. She was ready to slice the child to ribbons when...
"I can't sleep!"
The boy cried out in frustration. Madre Palmera froze. Knife still raised, she stared at the child as he shifted restlessly in the hay. But thankfully, she noticed his eyes were still closed. Still, she didn't want to take any chances. Reluctantly, Madre sheathed her sacrificial knife and tiptoed out of the barn. The witch decided to wait until the boy was truly asleep. As soon as the goat stopped bleeding, it would be her time to strike. Careful as she could, Madre Palmera closed the barn door shut. As soon as he heard the door, the boy shifted from the hay and got to his feet. He'd been awake the whole time, but now with the coast clear, he made his way toward a lumber pile just outside and took some logs and an axe. He had plans of his own. Back at the cottage, Madre Palmera sat in her study, listening for the sound of the goats. As soon as she heard their bleeding stop, she grabbed her blade and trekked toward the barn. While walking through the field, she swung her sacrificial blade through the air, chanting,
"Ra, ra, ra, little knife, do your work, ra."
But when she opened the door, the child was gone. Then Madre Palmera heard a voice in the wind.
"I cannot sleep because of these chickens."
She realized the noise had come from the hen house. In his attempts to fall asleep, the boy had moved locations, and the damn brat was still awake. Frustrated, Madre went back inside the cottage and laid in bed. This time she planned to sleep until just before dawn. Then she would strike. Hours later, as the first rays of the sun shone through her window, Madre Palmera rose to her feet. Grabbing her knife, she suddenly changed her mind. This time, she decided to finish off the men first and then slay the boy. That way, he would have no one to cry out to for help. Madre quietly made her way to the bedroom where her daughters lay with the adventurers. All the while, she whispered to her blade,
"Rah, rah, rah, little knife, do your work, rah."
First, she approached Ruby's bed and raised her blade. Then she swung it down, decapitating the man beside her in one blow. His head rolled away in the shadowy room, leaving a trail of blood. But still, the other men slept. She smiled to herself. This was going to be easier than she anticipated. Madre Palmera continued her sacrifices, adding two more heads to join the pile. And all the while, her daughters slept soundly. The witch cackled at the scene. The room was soaked with still warm blood, and three grisly heads laid at the center of the floor. It had been a trying night, but she'd finally slain her victims. Now, with these sacrifices, she would surely have a bountiful harvest before winter and even greater treasures. She lit some candles to get a closer look at her bloody handiwork, but as soon as she saw the men's decapitated bodies, she let out a horrified scream. Madre Palmera had murdered her own three daughters. Their faces were locked in terror. She soon realized they'd been wrapped in the jackets of the three travelers, while wooden dolls were wearing the girls' dresses. The dummies were placed in the beds to impersonate them. She had been fooled. Madre Palmera's blood began to boil.
"By my knife, you bastards shall pay the ultimate price!"
the crone cried to the heavens. Meanwhile, in the barn, the boy was hiding with Santiago, Sebastian, and Samuel. The three men were shaking with fright. If the boy hadn't woken them and replaced them with those dolls, they would be as good as dead. But now, they were trapped in the barn of a murderous witch.
"What are we gonna do?"
Santiago asked, sweat streaming from his brow.
"Should we run?"
Sebastian asked, his eyes darting to the distance.
"We could fight,"
Samuel added.
"But perhaps we should run."
The boy piped up.
"Don't worry, friends. Stay here, and I promise to protect you. I will take on this witch."
Then the child walked out the barn door, leaving the men trembling inside. With a mighty screech, Madre Palmera stepped out of her cottage and ran toward the barn. In one hand, she held her knife, and in the other, an iron strongbox. When she saw the boy in the yard, she raised her blade. The child scampered away from Madre Palmera. With inhuman speed, he sprinted toward a palm tree and climbed all the way to the top. The old crone didn't hesitate. As soon as she reached the tree, she opened her strongbox and pulled out a shiny hatchet. With all her might, she chucked it at the boy. The child dodged the blade, and the hatchet lodged itself in the palm tree's trunk. But the witch had more magical tricks up her sleeve. Raising her arms, Madre Palmera screamed,
"Slim down!"
The boy felt the tree shrink underneath him. It began to bend beneath his weight. The boy reached into his bag and pulled out chicken eggs, freshly pilfered from the hen house he'd hidden inside. He threw them at Madre Palmera. The eggs hit her again and again, covering her in runny yolks. The witch shrieked,
"Slim down!"
The tree shrank again, threatening to snap underneath him.
"Fatten up!"
the boy replied, eggs still flying from his hand. And in the next instant, the tree returned to its normal size. This volley of dueling magic continued on and on until Madre Palmera yelled,
"Hatchet, return to me!"
The blade returned to her grip like a boomerang. She threw it at the boy with all her might. Except this time, he caught it. For a moment, he looked at the hatchet in his hand in wonder. Then he chucked it back at the witch. The blade flew like a bolt of lightning, slicing the witch's left arm clean off before striking the ground. Madre Palmera screamed in agony as blood sprayed from the stump where her arm had been. In pure rage, she pulled the hatchet from the earth and threw it with her right arm, only for the boy to grab it once again. He tossed it back with unbelievable force. Madre Palmera stood silent. The hatchet was stuck in the dirt behind her, yet she seemed unscathed, until her head slipped from her neck and fell to the ground, a look of utter shock frozen on her wrinkled face. Untold decades of murder and magic, and she was slain by a mere child. The boy slid down the trunk of the tree. He approached the body of Madre Palmera and pulled the hatchet from the ground. He then sunk the blade deep into her chest. He split her open and took out her heart. Then he cut it into three even pieces. Collecting the slices of red muscle, he walked away from the witch's dismembered corpse and to the cottage. Inside, his three companions were looting the place in a panic.
"We came to the jungle to find treasure, and we will not return to the village empty-handed fools,"
Santiago declared. But when the boy walked through the door, the three men froze.
"Friends, please let me help you,"
the boy said with a smile. He then guided the men to the bedroom where the witch's three daughters still lay slain. Despite the gruesome mess, the boy began reassembling their corpses, forcing the heads of Ruby, Zephyra, and Perla back onto their bodies. The three men gasped in utter horror. Santiago was on the verge of vomiting. Then the boy took the three pieces of Madre Palmera's heart and stuffed them into the dead women's mouths. The bodies began to glow red, and in the next moment, the three women returned to life. The flesh and sinew of their necks reformed, and their bodies cracked as their spines aligned. They were as good as new. As the three recently dead women got to their feet, the men looked on, horrified. Ruby, Zephyra, and Perla looked around, confused. The boy explained what had happened. Their wicked witch of a mother had slain them by accident, but he revived them using her mystical heart. Santiago insisted that they helped. The three women thanked the adventurers profusely. Then they began pleading with them. They claimed their mother forced them to help her kill travelers for her sacrificial magic. But Santiago shrugged off their murderous past.
"We can certainly forgive innocent women, especially ones as lovely as you."
His friends nodded in eager agreement. The boy then stepped between them and opened the witch's iron strongbox. Inside was an array of glittering jewels and piles of gold.
"Here are the treasures I took from the witch. Now you can all start new, bountiful lives together."
Santiago was stunned. Despite his cowardice and all his cruelty toward the boy, he realized the magical child had helped them every step of their journey and had even saved their lives. He truly was a saint. With tears in his eyes, Santiago embraced the boy. And soon, Samuel and Sebastian embraced them too. The boy beamed.
"It's what I was here to do, my friends. But if you could, please step back. Your hugs are crushing me."
The adults let the squirming boy go to breathe. Then, gathering their treasures, they prepared to leave the cursed cottage behind. They returned to the village that evening. Maribel was ecstatic to reunite with her baby boy, and Santiago, Samuel, and Sebastian were welcomed as heroes. Using the wealth and food they'd taken from Madre Palmera's land, they revitalized the village. They used their newfound riches to fund the town. They replanted their wilting crops and fed their starving livestock. And before long, the famine was over. In time, Santiago, Samuel, and Sebastian became the village leaders and lived long, happy lives with their wives, Ruby, Zephyra, and Perla. And through the years, their families and their altruistic legacies grew. Meanwhile, the boy lived an equally long and fortunate life with his mother. But as everyone else in the village grew older, the boy seemed to stay the same, a boy. But when the three men inevitably passed on, they were greeted by a stunning sight on the other side. It was the boy standing at the pearly gates with stark white wings. He had been a true angel all along. The palm tree story can be interpreted a number of ways. One facet of the tale is a possible allegory on the spread of Christianity through Colombia and South America. When the conquistadors colonized the continent in the 16th century, they also brought religion and tried to stamp out indigenous beliefs. But conversion in Colombia was brought to a head when the Spanish Inquisition, a Catholic institution dedicated to eliminating heresy, intervened. The organization cracked down on witches and shamans across South America. The palm tree story could be understood as a parable on conversion, specifically during the time of the Spanish Inquisition. The boy rescues the three men from the evil witch, secures them wives, and ultimately brings them onto a more righteous path that leads them to heaven. Then, at the end, he reveals he was an angel all along. Just like how colonizers wanted to save South America's native people by converting them, the boy saved the wicked men and helped them live moral lives. In a way, the tale may have worked like religious propaganda. But religious roots aside, at its core, the palm tree story is a morality tale about turning the other cheek. Despite their cruelty, the boy does what he can to help the three travelers, even after they try to hurt him or even kill him. Perhaps to say that anyone can follow a kinder path with a little help from their friends. Thanks for listening to Tales. We'll be back on Wednesday with a new episode. You can find more episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals, like Tales, for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. To stream Tales on Spotify, just open the app, tap Browse, and type Tales in the search bar. Join me next week for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Brian Golub, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Isabella Way. This episode of Tales was written by Jacob Davison, with writing assistance by Greg Castro. I'm Vanessa Richardson.